Hey guys.
Hey Ben, nice hat. Is it new?
I figured the four of us are recording a bunch of episodes, and one of those is the holiday special. So I figured that not everyone would dig on the idea of kissing under the mistletoe. So.
Hey guys! Hey! Nice hat, Ben!
Hey! Nice hat, Brian!
Oh, good. You're twins.
Dibs on Danny DeVito!
Damn it!
Is there one for me in there?
I have one for everyone. Like I said, it's the holiday special, so I figured I'd go full on Santa Claus, I'd dress up, and I'd give everyone presents. I crocheted Santa hats in our Ranger colors, which somehow Sasha, the most Jewish person in the group, is still the closest to Santa, what with being red. And here is yours, Mike.
I look okay.
What's going on? Why are you guys wearing Christmas hats in August?
Well, Ben is in the holiday spirit today.
Again. Why?
Because the episodes we have to record today include a season to remember.
Nope.
Oh, come on. It has a great moment where Raymond talks about Hanukkah.
Nope.
Like, it's not just blink and you miss it. He actually talks about the holiday and what it means to us.
Nope.
Well, what about...
Nope.
But really?
Nope.
What?
Nope.
Come on, Sasha, please.
Well...
Huh.
Wait, she just left?
Aw. She didn't even take her hat. Time of day, internet. How is everybody out there in the world wide web doing? My name is Ben Taylor. I am your Green Ranger for this season of for this season of Voices from the Grid, and it is the first season I can say that without my heart hurting. I'm joined today by two of my friends and my fellow Rangers, starting with our Blue Ranger, my cohort in crime, my brother from another mother, Mr. Michael Lindenbaum.
Howdy. And just like Rocky, I evidently fail at many things right now, so...
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring up this is like the third time we've recorded this episode, but whatever. And alongside Mike and I is our genius of all things technical shizzle bizzle, and this season's Pink Ranger, Mr. Brian Massey. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing just fine. How are y'all? Yeah, Mike.
Good.
Good. God.
Maybe yeah. You can invent, Mike, a way to not delete files. anyway, that being said, we're here to record a three-episode content today. We are going to be covering the episodes A Small Problem, the Christmas special, the final holiday special until Samurai, a season to remember, and Oily to Bed and Oily to Rise. So, where do we begin? Small problems. is the episode we are going to start with, which is an episode all about Tommy and Kat being shrunk and put in a terrarium with a giant spider. It's a normal size spider, but they're small. It being revealed that Tommy has the strength to punch through mountains. But we'll get to that later. Prince Sprocket has invented himself a ray we see at the beginning, which is supposed to make things big, but it makes them very small. That's basically the plot of the episode. This episode and the next one, I know that Mike and I have raved about him in earlier episodes, include what might be the best side character in all of the first three seasons of Power Rangers. What's his name?
Raymond.
Raymond. The person who I genuinely had wished to become the Gold Ranger. And not Austin St. John. And Jason, should I say. But I quite like Raymond. This is mainly the thing. The episode starts out with Tommy and Kat talking about some project that they're doing where they need to go out into the desert and capture wildlife to put in a terrarium. And someone says something like being careful out in the desert. And Kat says what you should never, ever say in anything ever. She utters the immortal line, "What can possibly go wrong?"
Everything.
Might as well not even go now.
Yeah. At that point, you're just like, really? Really? And Raymond comes in and he's going to go out with Kat and Tommy in Tommy's truck. And I think he's mentioning something about finding spiders and wildlife to put in the terrarium. They're doing like a civics project or an environmental project or something.
According to the Ranger Wiki, it is an ecosystem project for a terrarium.
Ah, right, but for what class? I wouldn't think it was an ecosystems class.
I would probably just assume maybe a science class of some sort then.
All right.
Like that sounds like a natural science class or something.
Yeah. And Tanya's there because she's going, here's something that I never understood, right? So Tanya's there and she's like, oh, I'm going to work on the terrarium while you're gone. Right?
Aren't they taking the terrarium?
Hang on. I'm going to work on the terrarium while you're gone. Just bear that in mind. Tanya says, I'm going to work in the terrarium while you're gone. Right? Just because they've got little specimen things. They're going to bring all the things back in. But just bear in mind that Tanya is working on the terrarium. Gotcha. So they head out into the desert, and as they are doing that, we see Sprocket showing Clank and Orbis his new invention, which is like, I'm going to grow monsters to supersize, and he shoots a rock, and it turns into a teeny tiny pebble, and then King Mondo shows up and is like, Sprocket, you said you were going to invent me a thing to make things grow, and you made it small. You're a genius. Because he's a blind father, I guess. And don't get me wrong, I do quite like the idea of shrinking the Rangers, right? Is this the first time they shrunk the Rangers?
I think this might be the first time they've actually shrunk.
When was Honey, I Shrunk the Rangers?
That sounds like a Turbo episode, I think. I don't know. But just going on that, I think it's kind of funny, by the way. Mm-hmm. Sprocket brings Clank and Orbis out there to show them this device where they can like grow the monsters, because he's essentially saying, look, I'm putting you out of a job.
Yeah. Because let's be honest, Prince Sprocket kind of a douche.
Yeah.
Right?
He's that kid that nobody liked in elementary school, man.
He was Mike.
That's mean.
So Honey, that's I Shrunk the Rangers was Turbo.
Okay. So that's not till next season. All right.
Educated guess.
We then have Cat and Tommy trying. They arrive in his truck, and for some reason, Raymond splits off on his own rather than staying with them in the desert, because that's what you would do, right? And then Cat and Tommy decide the best way to try and catch a really fast lizard is to just run at it. It's like they have no tactical mindset whatsoever.
I mean, they have to save that tactical savvy for when they fight the monsters.
Right. Sure. We'll get to that. So Sprocket and a bunch of cogs show up, and rather than actually just fighting the cogs, Tommy and Cat try to run from them, and then they get cornered. And rather than teleport out, they try to run some more. They again, it's another case of the writers forgetting they have point to point teleport. They could just leave. Yeah.
And you know what's funny? I feel like at the same point, because there's this whole thing, not to go ahead, but like Raymond's like, they left me there, but like I feel like if they did that, it wouldn't really change that plot point. They left me out in the desert. It's like, yeah, well we had to beat, but then I guess we wouldn't have an episode.
Yeah. And then Tommy and Cat morph. They get grabbed by the cogs and they get shrunk. And then, rather than try and get away, they just stand there as Prince Sprocket picks them up and puts them into a terrarium.
Because that is great.
That looks just like the one that Tanya was supposed to be working on.
Well, hold on a minute. Didn't Raymond and... didn't they load that into the truck, though?
Maybe.
They loaded that into the... So then how is Tanya going to work on something that's not going to be at the use? Oh, my God. The writing in Zio is so great, everybody. I love it so much. Oh, my God. It's amazing. Wow. It's amazing.
And we get treated to what might be the second best use of Tommy in any Power Rangers season he's in, which is small squeaky Tommy.
See, aya!
What, him singing with Tanya wasn't good enough?
No. Oh, God.
For those interested, the best use of Tommy in any Power Rangers season he's in is in Dino Thunder, when he's encased in amber and can't do anything. But yeah, we get small squeaky Tommy and small squeaky Cat put into this terrarium. And then Prince Sprocket adds Harry the Spider. Now, I have a note here that just says, this episode is an arachnophobe's nightmare.
I would probably agree with that one.
Yeah.
Like, don't mind spiders, but the bigger they are, the more creeped out you get by them.
And then there's a moment where they have to try and stop the spider, because the spider is getting close to them. So rather than just run away from him, run down the side of the terrarium to the other end of the terrarium, they just decide to stand there and let it get closer. And then Tommy displays that he is the strongest person alive by punching something that is equivalently the size of a mountain, so that rocks fall off it and create a wall to stop spider that famously is unable to climb things.
And the way it looks too, the little ledge that they got, or the little like buffer area.
Yeah.
It looks like the spider could, doesn't he have to do that? They could just go around to the left or right and then, oh, look, food. Like, okay. But no, they limit. They're like, oh yeah, we're saved. I'm like, no, you're not. You're very much not saved.
So the Gold Ranger shows up.
Yeah.
And is of course the Gold Ranger, and is all like, hey, I'm stupid and overpowered, but I'll forget how to be overpowered, and definitely won't teach the person taken over from me when I leave. And as he's doing that, the others, Kanya, Rocky, and Adam, discover the shrunken version of Tommy's truck, which they take back to Billy to get him to scan it. And he's like, oh, it's definitely their truck. You can see the license plate, because it's absolutely impossible to recreate a license plate in like a model or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Meanwhile, the Gold Ranger is fighting off the Cogs and Sprocket, having saved Tommy and Kat from the terrarium. Go ahead.
So when that fight was happening with the Gold Ranger, I thought that he still had Tommy and Kat in his hand.
Yeah.
As he was throwing punches and stuff. I was like, okay, first and foremost, that's going to crush them. But even if it doesn't, like, how sick do they got to be just like being moved around like that?
And then you have the moment where you realize they're not in his hand. It's like, who stepped on them? So then the others teleport back, morph, and join the fight, right? The very first question is, why does Sprocket not just zap the other Rangers too?
Right? Did the gun stop working or something?
Yeah, he just forgot he had it, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be somewhat of a challenge. You couldn't just shrink them all. He probably wanted to have a nice little fight before he shrank them.
And like, even if he accidentally shrinks a cog, it's like they produce one a minute or something. So who cares?
One a day.
One a day. That's right.
Yeah. There's a. I think shrinking the Rangers is a really clever plan, because then they're too small to like do anything. They can't operate their Zords. Like, it's actually quite a clever plan if they follow through with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Like they do have good ideas. Just sometimes poor execution.
Yeah. It's the follow through. It's the getting it through there. That's always been the problem with Power Ranger villains.
And then they run off the mons, they run off the cogs and everything. And we are returned back to the command center, and where we have tiny, tiny Tommy and tiny Cat on a bench. And Billy says the shrinking is due to the reduction of the space between the molecules. On the count of three, 1, 2, 3, that's not how science works. And then he just so happened, like in so many Power Rangers episodes, Billy just so happens to have invented the exact thing they need recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or he's in the process of doing something that he can like adapt into it. And it just so happens that he's got the gun lying on a counter in the power chamber that happens to reverse shrinking.
Yeah. And it's not even the fact that it's like, oh, I've got this, you know, like he doesn't have it on a stand, or he's like, it's not like a proud little thing. It's just like in a pile of other junk too. And he's like, yeah, this is all the crap I've been working on the last week, I guess. And it's like, what? Okay.
And it's not even like it's not even like he's like, oh, give me 20 minutes and I can knock something up, right? It's already built.
Yeah.
And he shoots the Jeep with it, and it's like, bing, Jeep's back. And then he goes to start doing it on Cat and Tommy. And Zordon's all like, Billy, you must proceed slowly, because this has never been tried on anything but an inanimate object. And he just goes 3 seconds, they're back to full split, full size. He doesn't have to regulate anything. He doesn't do any testing. He doesn't do anything. He just does it. Bam. Done.
He doesn't even switch to like human mode or something, or like, you know.
He doesn't even switch yet to flick.
Yeah. Billy just goes, nah, hold my beer, Zordon. Let me just get this done already. Yeah.
He's got this freaking like modified Super NES Super Scope that like he's pointing at a car and going, okay, cool, that'll work on humans too. 1, 2, 3. I'm gonna do this slowly. It's like, I honestly remember watching this the first time and going, did I miss something, or was there a scene missing from my DVD? Because this happened way too fast. But hey, you know what? We got a monster fight to get to, so screw it.
And then on top of all of that, right? On top of all of it, there's a right afterwards, Adam and all the others are like, oh, Billy, that was good work, dude. And he's like, yeah, I'm glad. It's one of the biggest challenges I've ever faced.
Billy, I'm now, so happy you wanted this journey with you.
I know they were probably just making a play on the fact of big and small, the title of the episode, but it did not come off like that at all. Like... It was B-A-D-D, bad. It just, it was not good.
I got nothing. I really got nothing. Even when you're like, oh God, I don't know. Even if you're watching this like in a block of other like cartoons or something back in the day, like I feel like I would have watched this as a kid and just been like, okay, cool. Like what? Like, I don't know. I got nothing.
So then we get we cut to the monster fight, right? Which is our first Sentai footage of the episode, I think.
I think so. There might be a little bit of clank, you know, but whatever.
Yeah. Where the spider is now a robot. And...
Yep. Called Tarantabot.
Tarantabot, yeah. And the Rangers are quite happily holding their own against the Cogs and Tarantabot. And the Black Ranger shows up to, quote-unquote, save the Rangers. AKA he needs to be there so that he can be around when they need his sword. Like 2 seconds into the fight, the Rangers summon the Zeo cannon and just shoot around the bot, and it's done. And then we get into a really weird thing, which I think is going to have a bit of a discussion here. Tarantibot grows, and they summon the Zeo Zords, and we have what might be, it's not even might be, it definitely is, our first, what I'd like to call, unearned Ultra Zord.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much of the opinion that I don't like the Zeo Ultra Zord. It leaves far too many questions. Like, it isn't a good Ultra Zord. It's just a bunch of Zords getting inside another Zord. Not even like the platform from the Thunder Zords, right, where they squashed him and it was funny. Like the Monty Python foot. That's all I ever saw when they used that attack.
I kind of like that.
You hear the Monty Python Flying Circus music
in the yeah. Just a 16-ton weight. And this Ultra Zord is just this Pyramidus that stands up, and the other Ultra Zords, the other Zeo Zords get inside it, and then the red Battle Zord gets a piggyback, I guess.
No, stop it. Fall too silly. Sorry, and I had to. But yeah.
And most times when, especially previously, and maybe even up until, I want to say, Megaforce, maybe, when an Ultra Zord is introduced, it's introduced for a reason. Like, oh, we can't beat this current monster without moving into an Ultra Zord formation, right?
Right.
But they don't even fight Tarantabot before the Gold Ranger's like, hey, we should form an Ultra Zord, boy!
The biggest problem that the Zords have during this fight with Tarantabot is Tarantabot uses the tiny nets from Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Yeah.
And they can't, tiny net, you know, and then that prompts the Gold Ranger to be like, hey guys, Pyramidus time. It's like, what?
And let's talk a bit about this, right? Because, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
The actual Gold Ranger, as of current, is someone called Trey of Triforia. An alien from another planet. The Zeo Zords were built by Billion Alpha. How does Pyramidus perfectly fit 6 Zords that were built on another planet where no one knows about them?
I would have to say that because he knows who Zordon is, he was able to hack into the mainframe of the power chamber and was able to get the specifics so he could...
Do you not think that at some point, if that had happened, we'd have had an episode going, huh, weird, someone hacked into the power chamber?
Yes. This hasn't happened since... You know,
ever
that episode
since the other time the power chamber was hacked into.
and what also makes this even weirder is the Gold Ranger, Black Ranger, whatever. It shows them a schematic. He's got like a blueprint drawn up about, yeah, like, hey, this is where every single one of your swords goes, and it's like, wait, I thought, because I don't know, Pyramidus, I don't know if they ever say, like, how old is that Zord?
Yep.
Because it's supposed to be this ancient thing, right?
Yep.
So then,
which perfectly fits 6 Zords that got built this year.
How the hell does that work?
You know what? You know what? I have a better idea.
Yeah,
Billy hacked the system and found Pyramidus in Zordon's like secret files and was like, hey, I have an idea. Let's build Zords that can magically fit into this thing. Look, if it magically shows up.
Look, she's not here, but someone should be using Sasha's catchphrase at this point.
Yeah.
There's a perfectly good explanation for
this. Yeah. I mean, in my headcanon, I almost want to say, since, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this guy, sorry, but like, I could even buy that, like, Pyramidus existed first, and like, there was these schematics in like Zordon's files or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Billy was like, well, since we're, you know, utilizing these Zeo powers, because the Zeo crystal's been around forever, and we're going to finally tap into that. Hey, we've got plans for these different Zords. Let me build into these specifications. And then hopefully, maybe if this other Zord comes around, then we can utilize that, because then I can, that's easier to digest for me than just, oh, well, they just fit together perfectly. Whoop-de-doo, you know?
Yeah. My other final gripe, right, mm-hmm. about this is in the very last episode, it concluded with the Rangers basically saying, oh, we can't trust the Gold Ranger. Is he a friend? Is he a foe?
Right.
And then this episode, it's like, sod it. Let's form an Ultra Zord with him. What up, fam?
Well, I think on this one, it's because of the fact that, like, he came to the rescue for Cad and Tommy when they're shrunk, and they kind of went like, okay, he came and he saved us in this moment. Let's see if we can trust him in this regard. You know, of doing the Ultra Zord. So I think that's probably where the mindset for that one came from.
All right, maybe. We'll see.
Not like they tell us.
And as I like to do when we focus on these episodes, I like to focus on our Balkan Skull subplot separately at the end. Mm-hmm. Because, quite frankly, this isn't the strongest Balkan Skull subplot. Basically, the detective agency is hired to look into like a file to see if a miner did find the mother load or whatever it's called. And the only thing it's really notable for is we have a small tease that Skull might be our Gold Ranger. That's our tease for this episode. Yes, we'll talk about Raymond next episode. Yes, he's in the episode. And they could also be referring to the fact that he's the Gold Ranger. But the big tease this episode is Skull, because right at the end, Bulk is looking for him, and he, quote-unquote, sees the Gold Ranger, but his vision's all blurry, and when he blinks it away, its Skull stood there.
I think I would kind of like Skull being the Gold Ranger. I don't know if it would necessarily fit perfectly, but I think it would be interesting, and I think, yeah, that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this when we did the White Ranger episode, that I thought it would be quite nice if Skull was the White Ranger. But, anyway. That's kind of small problem. It's the first of three not really good episodes of Power Rangers. All right, so that was a small problem. And now we move on to what might be my least favorite moment in all of Zeo.
And probably Ranger Wikipedia's least favorite one, because the synopsis and the plot is like nothing.
It is my least favorite moment of Zeo, because it means we're saying goodbye to Raymond. But it might be what I personally consider to be the worst episode of Power Rangers ever. Not necessarily because of the content, but because of... Anyway. It is the episode A Season to Remember. You might know it better as the infamous Flash Forward episode. It is the holiday special for Zeo. And as I mentioned in the intro, it would be the final holiday special. Not necessarily, like, they do an occasional, like, Halloween episode here or there or whatever. But when it comes to, like, holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all that kind of stuff, it is the last one we get until Samurai, where we start getting clip shows over with a little bit of plot put between them. Anyway, we open up this episode with a young child
that can't act.
That cannot act to save its life at any point in this episode. Running in, and meeting with his grandfather, who is conspicuously only filmed from behind as if to conceal his identity, even though he sounds exactly like Jason David Frank.
I wonder who it is.
Yeah. And the grandfather starts telling the grandchild a Christmas story. We move to current era Angel Grove to what is it called? Like a festival of
I forget what they call it. They call it the pain of our misery.
You said called it, Mike?
The pain of our misery.
Yeah. The folly of human culture.
It's the holiday jubilation.
Basically, what they're doing is... I don't know. Basically, they're having a thing at Ernie's bar where everyone is getting together to talk about how different cultures celebrate the holidays, right?
Yeah.
There's a menorah and a Christmas tree, and I want to apologize. I don't know what the actual vessel used for worship during Kwanzaa is. And then Cat brings shrimp because in Australia, Christmas is during summer. So it's traditionally a barbecue day for everybody. And yeah. Rocky just goes, "Oh, shrimp!" And just grabs the plate. At this point, Ernie is like, "Hey, I gotta go do some stuff. Will y'all hang out and look after the place?" Ernie leaves teenagers in charge of his bar.
Do we remember what happened last time he left the keys to somebody? Kim wound up in the hospital. So yeah. Not a good...
Oh, I should have done this at the beginning of the episode, but...
Oh, God, here we go.
I'm going to open up a can on this episode. This episode, I've got a delicious dark berry zero sugar Dr. Pepper. Anyway,
very good stuff.
But that is actually a can of whoop ass, because this episode is bad. And it is the five power teens, minus Billy, plus Raymond, right? Because Raymond's the one that's teaching them all about Hanukkah and that kind of thing. And he's chilling out, being awesome. Jewish.
And I know for like Sasha, she would kind of go like, oh, you know, it's a blank and you miss it for like the Jewish representation. But like, I actually have to say that this is probably the best that we're probably ever going to get in Power Rangers to actual Jewish representation, where, you know, you actually have somebody explain their holiday in the episode and not just have it where like in the previous holiday episode that we did the season before, it's literally the menorahs in the background. And if you blink, you literally miss it.
Does Bridge ever talk about it in SPD?
I don't know. I don't remember. I've only seen SPD once.
Because he's canonically Jewish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like he's right? Like legit Jewish.
All right.
Maybe when we get the SPD and I start watching those episodes again, we'll see if he actually does talk about it more. Because I've only seen that season once.
All right. And we get a scene where Lieutenant Stone, we'll talk about Bulk and Skull at the end, as we tend to do. King Mondo has taken offense to the fact that the Earthlings are enjoying themselves at this time of year. Someone dares say the word love in his presence, and he's like, I told you, never say that word in my presence, even though he said it a bunch about his own family. Anyway, and they decide to use a intolerance gun to make it so that anyone hit by the intolerance gun thinks their own version of the holiday is the best version of the holiday.
Yeah.
Right? So while you've got like Tanya's explaining what the various candles mean over Kwanzaa and all that kind of thing, right? Actual, like, a little bit of an info dump. Not a whole lot, but a little bit, right? And, like, I think it's Adam who's like, Korea doesn't really do Christmas and that kind of thing.
Like, I know in Japan, like, they celebrate Christmas, but they don't really celebrate Christmas. It's more of like a, like, it's almost like Valentine's Day over there.
Yeah, like, in Christmas isn't the most popular place to be in Japan, KFC?
Yes. They do Christmas in Neewa, Kentucky, which is like you pre-order your thing because they're like, well, that's what the Americans do, right? And it's like,
no.
No. No, we don't do that, but okay. Anyways.
But I will gladly accept that interpretation of Christmas.
Yeah. Like New Year's is more important to them than Christmas in Japan, from what I...
Moment where... Prince Sprocket and a bunch of cogs beam into the youth center. And the five power teams run up to the front and just assume a fighting stance. And Raymond stood there like, what's going on? This being the Raymond that before had helped the Rangers defeat a computer virus that had hacked the entire city in the power chamber, directly talked with the Green Ranger, who sounds just like his best friend Adam, and is now seeing said best friend square up with the cogs, along with all his other friends.
Mm-hmm.
And not once do we hear the question, are you guys the Power Rangers?
He knew too much. They had to put him down after the episode.
That's where he went. He knew too much. He got Tarantino'd. He got thrown in like the back of a car. It's like, sorry, man.
Just want to see the episode now with like Alpha showing up at his house and like taking him away and silently disposing of the body.
No witnesses.
You know too much.
You can never be the Gold Ranger.
So they hit the five power teens and Raymond with this intolerance beam, right? Which I previously said means, it's supposed to mean that they think that their version of the holiday is the best. Right. What it actually does is turn them all into douchebags.
Yes.
Right? Because you can still think your version of the holiday is the best, but get on with someone, right?
Yeah.
But what it actually does is just make them into a bunch of butts.
Like, if they had described it as like, not only, like, if they had added that little addendum, it's like, not only is your holiday the best, but everyone else sucks, and you must, like, you have to tell them about that. It's like something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, a clear example of that was when like Tommy realized, oh, we don't have a Christmas tree. And it's like his first instinct is go to the Jew and be like, you go get our Christmas tree.
And then he's like, like Ruby Rod from Fifth Element. He's like, and then Adam's like, well, I identify with queer and they don't celebrate Christmas, so I'm just leaving, right? Even though he's still there for the rest of the episode. And
she doesn't even go here.
Yeah, right. There's also the moment where they get hit by the intolerance gun, right? But not only does it make them intolerant, all of the holiday stuff disappears somehow.
Yeah. Oh, because, so the reason for that is because Mondo steals them. He, like, uses magic to steal all the holiday decorations and presents to bring him up to.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So.
Somebody really, really wanted to do a Power Rangers version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and it shows. And. Yeah.
And then they're all arguing and bickering amongst themselves about whose idea of the holidays is better. Adam has his lines like, well, great. I guess there's not going to be any celebration. After earlier in the episode saying that he identifies with Korea, where they don't celebrate Christmas anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he was still down the party, though.
That's true.
Because Adam is the greatest Power Ranger of all time.
Very true. And then a young girl shows up for the. And I say this, and Brian just put his head in his hands. Brian, take it away.
Oh, God. Okay. So this girl shows up, and like the youth center is like. Even though it's empty, it's still kind of a mess. And she's like, well, is the party gonna happen? I brought a poster. And it's like all the people of the world holding hands. And then like, she sings a song and like, it's the worst song ever. And like, that breaks them of their spell. And it's like, why? Why? Like, oh my God. Like this, it was such a shill. It was just like, I don't even know if it was an actual like holiday song. It was like, holiday time for loving and you. And it's like, I had to mute the TV the second time I watched it because I was like, this is painful to watch. But yeah, it breaks some other spell and they can go do.
They can go be Power Rangers.
Even though I don't think they morph this episode. They don't.
And then after everything is right with celebrations again.
Oh yeah, and they hang up the poster too, by the way.
Yeah, and they hang up the poster because sure.
Sure. Got it. Gotta hang that.
We cut on. Back to the far future where it is revealed that the grandfather has been shock and horror, Tommy Oliver all along. And he has been telling this tale to his grandson. And as this has been happening, there's a knock on the door. And the grandmother opens the door to the child. The child's father, the grand... Yeah,
makes sense. No, his brother, actually.
No. It's the father of the grandchild. So it is Tommy's kid. And the person that Tommy's been telling the story to is his kid's kid. Because he comes in and like he actually calls Tommy dad. Right?
Which, interestingly, it's very more convoluted than that. So... the father of the because apparently the son's name is JJ.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's what it became in the comic book.
Yeah, Soul of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Which I guess I still consider not canon. But as she answers the door, it is revealed that the mother is Kat. And as they're about to take, as the father is about to take the grandchild away for Christmas, his communicator goes off with the Zordon era bleeping, revealing that the kid is in fact a Power Ranger, which is. I don't want to say a bone of contention, but it's kind of a bone of contention because of everything that happens at the end of Turbo and the power chamber getting destroyed and
in space and all that.
Blah, 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 blah. But yet somehow in the future, Jason still has... Anyway, but the bigger question mark here for so many years was Tommy and Kat, because she's not mentioned in Dino Thunder at all. Yes, they bring her back in Ninja Steel, and they're seen holding hands. But anyway, the point being, this episode. Sucks. The best thing about it is Raymond. The best thing about it is I like to think that this was the biggest tease of Raymond being the Gold Ranger, just because he's the sixth one hanging out with them. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't seem to act weird when the cogs show up. Like, he already knows that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like when they square up, he's not immediately put off by it.
Yeah, and notice that the person who eventually becomes the Gold Ranger isn't there. So it's like, oh, he might be the guy that steps in. Now, we know that if you pay attention, Austin St. John is credited in the credits, right? Because this was actually filmed where it airs on the DVD, but aired at the end of the season, I think.
Yeah, so what it is that he appears in the opening titles, but not appeared in the episodes. It takes place between Song Sung Yellow and Revelations of Gold. That's when this episode really takes place.
All right.
But was aired at the end of the season as it was near Christmas, obviously. And then the DVD release reordered the episodes, placing it in between A Small Problem and Oily to Bed, Oily to Rise. Also, an interesting note about this, there was supposed to be a VHS release of this episode separately called Tis the Season to Be Zeo, but it was canceled and instead released on the VHS Power Rangers Holiday Specials.
Yeah.
So this was supposed to have a completely different name to it.
Oh God! Can you just imagine some kid buying? Can you just imagine, because like the internet was not like as widely used back then? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being a kid and going, hey, mom, let me get that Power Rangers tape. And like, you get it. And it's not only the worst.
That is just the Christmas specials.
It's just the Christmas special. And there's no Power Rangers in that episode. It's like, oh, I would feel, I would feel robbed.
Not just holiday. I mean, interpretation. Actually, let me see. What was on the holiday specials VHS? God, remember VHS?
Yep. Still got some.
Yeah, so do I.
I do too. Man. It beat Betamax.
So the three episodes that they put on here, one of which we've actually never reviewed on the show, which is Alpha's Magical Christmas.
Oh, God.
And then it has I Dreaming of a White Ranger and A Season to Remember. Those are the three episodes.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'd rather watch the Ninja Turtles Christmas special.
I'd rather watch the Star Wars Christmas special.
Oh, my God.
I have. I have.
So have I.
I quite like it. Anyway. Season to Remember sucks. Bad.
Yeah.
Raymond Good. Episode bad.
Yeah, that's literally it.
Poor Raymond. We don't see him again after this either.
Yeah. Someone get NCIS on the case. I think Alpha's committed a murder.
I hate that the whole like crux of this story begins because this kid is just like, I hope I get a lot of presents, and like Tommy and all his senility is just like, presents, that reminds me of a story. And it's like,
that had nothing to do with presents.
Yeah.
Tommy, horrible leader, horrible storyteller.
Horrible storyteller. And that's how I wound up in Nam. What? you went way off the rails here, man. Anyways.
Grandpa, I think you need to see a doctor. I don't know what that story had to do with anything about presents.
Grandpa like, misses medication.
Like, don't get me wrong, right? I like that. I like that there is an effort in this episode to show us a bit more of, I don't want to say other cultures, but like actually put some effort into talking about things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely like the fact that, you know, like how they gave Raymond the opportunity to actually explain Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. Like, not just have, like in the previous one, menorah, blank, and you miss it. It's like, no, this is the menorah. This is why we light the candles and all this other stuff. It's like, it's actual good representation of the holiday by actually talking about it instead of just shoehorning it. And then you had Tanya, although we have many, many questions in regards to Tanya this season, with Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
And how she actually explained Kwanzaa.
It's the most
everyone knows Christmas. I mean, it's the most pushed holiday, you know, in this country, but to actually be given the ability to have these other holidays that are around the same time actually given some light.
Yeah.
And I think the only other show who really did that, more so for Hanukkah than anything, was Rugrats.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because Rugrats did Hanukkah specials.
And I can tell you right now, like, this is the only time I think I've ever watched a TV show and actually learned about Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I have ever seen a show on American TV sit down and go, this is Kwanzaa. Futurama even has a joke where, like, they're handing out books called, like, What is Kwanzaa? And it's like, this is the cover. It's like somebody just shrugging on the cover. So yeah, it was really cool to learn about that.
Yeah. There is a small Balkan Skull side quest in this episode, which is basically just Lieutenant Stone tells them to go find work. Being the fact that he's the boss. And it's like,
I'm too lazy. Go find a job somewhere.
What do you actually do, Lieutenant Stone? You don't solve the crimes. You don't find the work. What do you do?
I can tell you one thing he doesn't do.
Apparently, as we'll find out in the next episode, he writes a book about coffee. Anyway, yeah. Speaking of the next episode, we are moving on to Oily to Bed and Oily to Rise. Gonna love the play on words there. And my very first night is, oh joy, surfing. There's nothing these little bastards can't do.
Is that Rocky, and Rocky is the lifeguard.
Is that okay for our show?
Yes, we'll allow it. It's a one-time deal.
All right. But yeah,
David is back.
There's a great look. We'll get to David. He's this episode's Gold Ranger tease. But yes, there is a surfing competition happening at the beach in which Kat is going to enter. Now, I made the joke of, oh, joy, surfing. There's nothing they can't do. But it does kind of make sense that when Kat quit swimming, she'd find another aquatic pursuit to follow. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And also, she's from Australia. It's like, that's a very popular thing. It's like, yeah, it's very popular there. So,
there's a great little misdirect where Rocky, Tommy, and Kat are all talking by the lifeguard station. And Kat says, like, oh, the Gold Ranger could be right here right now. We wouldn't know it. And David just walks into shot. It's a great little moment. It's very well done. There is a plan from the Machine Empire to turn all of the water on Earth into what they call machine sludge, which I'm not sure is just the sludge they need to, like, make machines work, or if it's like it will turn anything that drinks it into a machine. I don't know.
I just hope it's not what, you know, it's what comes out the back of them or something. That'd be, yeah. Anyway.
Poop.
Poop.
Like we've dumped our waste into water ways for eons, dude.
Yeah.
And they plan to turn all the water into
oil.
Into oil. And they plan to do it with a monster called Leaky Faucet.
It's making its return.
To put it kindly, is derpy. And yes, as Mike alluded to, do you want to talk a bit more about that, Mike?
Yeah, so this is technically Leaky Faucet's return to the show. He was originally utilized in Invasion of the Ranger Snatchers.
Mm-hmm.
And Leaky Faucet is a, just as derpy as you say, is a robotic donkey-shaped faucet.
He's got these like horse teeth or something, and it's just horrifying.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, if you remember back in the original episode it aired in, or that it appeared in, Leaky Faucet was originally a movie costume that was stolen and brought to life.
Yeah.
And was utilized in Prince Sprocket's movie. So, yeah. And then was also merged with another monster, Bucket of Bolts, in that episode as well. Which could probably explain why they're able to bring it back, because Leaky Faucet was merged with another monster when it was attacked and destroyed. So maybe Bucket of Bolts took the brunt of it and Leaky Faucet was able to kind of...
I'll be honest, I couldn't care less why he's back. I think he's hilarious.
That's probably the real reason why he's back.
I just think he's funny.
I mean, keep in mind, monsters for Power Rangers usually never come back unless they are actually popular monsters amongst the fan base. Like, Pudgy Pig has returned a couple times because of his popularity with the fan base. So maybe when Leaky Faucet first debuted in that one episode, it got a good thing, and it's like, hey, let's try to bring them back if we can.
Maybe
that or more realistically, they had more footage of him from O-Ranger than they could use to.
Yeah, that was probably it.
Yeah.
And they needed a monster that dealt with water.
And it made sense.
Yeah. So Leaky Faucet is told to not leave the pipes. Because apparently he goes into the pipes, and that's where he
pollutes toxifies things.
Yeah, he pollutes it and starts turning it into this sludge. We have our first shot of the first heat of the surfing competition, where Cat is on, quote unquote, Cat is on the waves, and it is very clearly not Cat on the board. And then I'm not sure how they notice, but apparently they detect some cogs. I don't. Is it like the warning alarm goes off, or someone sees them, or something like that? And Adam and Tanya are sent to confront the cogs and stop them opening the waste pipes.
No, I remember what happened because I watched this last night. Adam and Tanya were training together. They were sparring. Which, by the way, Ben, I want your opinion on this, because they get done and then Tanya says to Adam, hey, good job. Almost like she's the sensei. What?
This will come up a bit later, but I think they were trying to sort of tease a romance between the two of them. Or at least a very close friendship. So,
So while Adam and Tanya are the first ones to kind of notice something very just suspicious with the water being oily. Yeah. I know you like to save them for the end, but the first ones who actually
We'll talk about Bulk and Skull later.
But the first ones who actually see it are actually Bulk and Skull.
What I'm asking is, how do they know it's the cogs?
So what they do is that they send it to the power chamber for Billy Dan.
And the reason that they get to that, by the way, is because they go up to Ernie and say, hey, we need some water, and he's like, oh man, I must not have cleaned that. And then like Adam gets handed the thing and he smells it and goes, oh, it's cog oil. That's how they deduce this whole thing. He's like, he smells what's going on in the water and goes, oh, it's cog oil, we need to go to Zora.
Yeah, like apparently they recognize the stench of cog oil.
Yeah, right. They've blown enough of them up at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, Adam and Tanya morph and are sent to stop the cogs opening the floodgates. At which point, Adam and Tanya, fully morphed, lose a fight to three cogs.
Yeah.
Three of them.
Not a good look.
Whereas, like a couple of episodes later or earlier, Adam kills about six of them with a bike. he just rolls a bike down a hallway and five of them fall over. So
that's a goal punch.
There's the water, the goop flows out into the water. And like Rocky's all like, oh, we've got to evacuate. And for some reason, Rocky, the lifeguard, evacuates the beach while Tommy and David are like, we'll get Cat out of the water. not the person whose job it is.
That's not how lifeguards work?
Not, hey, let's get Zordon to teleport Cat out of the water. We're going to send two people in to save Cat. And of course they have the, oh no, Tommy stuck underwater. And then somehow Cat disappears on under all these waves, even though she's a seasoned swimmer and a seasoned surfer. But I think that's just foreshadowing her powers melting in the Turbo movie, because I'm pretty sure Cat is at this point soluble.
That sounds like water.
And then we have a very interesting, I would like to say it's a very interesting encounter with the leaky faucet, where they're using these devices to trace them through the pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And on the devices, you can see the lettering, right? Is it O?
It's U-A-O-H.
U-A-O-H, which is what, Brian?
Don't have the acronym for me, but it's... United something. Let me find that real fast. I don't remember off the top of my head. But fun fact, you can see this acronym in the first couple of episodes. In episode 3, you see UA on the jet fighter pilots.
You see it in the Zord Bay too, right?
Yeah, you see UAOH in the Zord Bay as well.
United Air Force Over Tech Hardware.
Okay, yep, Mike, I'm going to ask Brian again because he's the Sentai guy. It's his thing. I want him to talk about his thing. Shut the smeg up. Brian, what does that mean again?
United Air Force Overtech Hardware.
All right. So how does that work with... So in O-Ranger, they're a private military?
Yes. And I think... So let me give you... I won't take up too much of your time, but I think that was an homage because O-Ranger at the time was considered the 20th anniversary of Super Sentai because they weren't... Hold on. No, I think they were just now counting that Go-Ranger and Jocko were officially part. There's a whole thing with that I'm not going to get into.
Yeah.
But there was something with Shatara Ishinomori's copyright on those two, whatever. Anyways, I think what it was because Go-Ranger was also a private military thing that had bases all around the world, they wanted to do something in homage to that. Mm-hmm. So in O-Ranger, yeah, there's this foundation that's very much like the one in Go-Ranger, which is called Eagle. And this is a United Air Force, and they have places in like New York and Japan and Brazil, stuff like that. And this is the best team that they have in Japan because all these other branches have fallen around the world. And I think something really kind of interesting too is like you hear like, oh no, the branch in the United States has fallen. So in Sentai, it's almost like, yeah, there's no chance that like a couple of people in the States could ever fight off a menace like this, but then we have Power Rangers.
Believe it or not, that's... Brian, you said that you won't take up too much time on this, but that might be the most interesting thing that's been said all episode.
Really?
Yeah, because yeah, these episodes are bad, dude.
Yeah. Hey, O-Ranger's a good season. Check it out.
And then we have a plan that is hatched by, I think it's by Tommy.
With the pipes.
The idea is to use Freon to freeze the pipes.
Yeah.
But Freon needs low pressure to freeze. Anyone going to say it with me?
Sure.
That's not how science works.
That's not how science works. Did they steal that from Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
I don't know.
Because you remember how the T-1000 got frozen with that... Oh, whatever. Anyways.
Liquid nitrogen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes a regular kind of Zord fight battle thing. And they form the really bad Ultra Zord and just shoot him. And it's kind of done. And all of the stuff that escaped into the environment is never mentioned again.
Which I guess there's a weird rule in Power Rangers or Sentai or whatever, where like the monster dies, therefore any effect it had on the environment, it's kaput, it's done. Yeah, like it gets nullified. Mm-hmm. And I would really love to see a Power Rangers episode where, yeah, we took care of the monster, but we still have this problem to deal with.
Yeah.
I think that would be really interesting.
I think that's something that we've said for quite a while now, which is it would be nice if they could think a bit more about, what's the word I'm looking for? Consequences and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you wanted to talk a little bit about Balkan Skull, so go ahead and I'll let you do that.
Well, all I was going to say was is that like when the whole thing was going down with the Cogoil, they were actually the first ones to notice it before anyone else did. Because
right, what is their subplot? This
their subplot is they have to make a pot of coffee for Detective Stone or Lieutenant Stone or whatever.
Yeah, because Stone is so lazy that he can't even make his own coffee despite having written a book about it. Yeah, I'm sorry, go on.
He says that the single most important skill any detective can have is to be able to make the perfect cup of coffee.
I think Batman would disagree on that one.
Like my coffee dark like the night.
My point being, this is why we never see Detective Stone solve any crimes. Because he doesn't.
I mean, at least Bulk and Skull have legitimately solved crimes.
They have. They very much have.
They solved the case of the giant fruitcake last episode. I guess. I don't know.
Something like that.
I don't care about these episodes. they spend the entire episode trying to brew coffee with toxic waste, basically.
With cog oil.
Yeah. And I guess the gist of it is that, like, because, and again, this ties into what I just said too about, hey, the monster's gone, so now they can, now any effect it had on the environment's null and void. I guess they go through all that trouble, and then the monster dies, and then, oh, the coffee's normal now, and Stone can drink it?
Well, according to this, they did it when they were able to get a fresh thing of water. So it's like, but at the same time, this would also explain why the slow, very, very, very slow demise of Detective Stone for us in the show, because we still have to deal with him for two more seasons.
Oh my God. Worst character on the show?
No. Close. But no.
Yeah.
I have one word for you.
Lay it on me.
Elgar. He's definitely the worst character this season. I don't want to talk about these episodes anymore. They're bad. Final thoughts, Mike?
We survived.
Yeah, again.
Yes.
Brian. Again. Aside from the really awesome stunt choreography on the water towers or whatever in the last episode, we really don't get to see too much that would really drive. Don't show these three episodes somebody if you're trying to get them to Power Rangers, because you're immediately going to just repel them from the idea of ever watching it again. And that's my two cents on it. Ben.
My biggest thing I want to say is I'm really sad we didn't get to see Billy in the holiday episode.
Yeah.
I would have been really interested as to how he celebrates. Because yeah. I think that they could have made a really logical thing out of him not celebrating. But rather than just having Adam be like, but I'm from Korea. Right.
But like, at the same time, it made sense because of when it actually aired, he was already off the show at that
point. Oh, no. I understand that. But that doesn't mean, I didn't want him to leave in the first place. But
nobody did.
Apparently he did. But yeah, my point being, it would have been a really nice thing for to have someone what's the word I'm looking for? Have someone put up a reason to not celebrate Christmas that isn't just, oh, I'm from Korea, you know?
Yeah,
or I'm Jewish, or I celebrate.
But no, I mean they're still celebrating holidays, right?
Yeah,
I mean, just like be like, I don't celebrate, it's illogical. I'd rather spend my time studying or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, no, but well, I mean, that's kind of the same deal of like, you know, have an excuse that's outside of I'm from a culture that doesn't do it, or
yeah,
I have a different holiday that I do celebrate. You know, it gives that different perspective.
Yeah, it would be really nice if they done something like that.
They could have made Billy like agnostic or something. Or,
yeah,
like I don't think, especially since it was airing on Fox, they would ever have a Power Ranger say, "Oh, I'm an atheist." But
anyway, that being said, we're gonna wrap up. Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on the Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing, I hope, at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. Of course, everything's on the website at txhthockey.com, and for the show specific.
That gets done at the end. That's always the thing we sign off with before the exit. Always, every episode. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on TikTok at Blue Ranger BI. Yep. The orange ones are my favorite. You can also find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek.
On TikTok. God damn it, Brian.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. You can find me there. And you can also find me over at castgrapestudios.com doing all kinds of fun things with friends of the show, Colin and Sean. And always here as well. Check us out.
Ben. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And you can find the sister show to Voices from the Grid, Awesomania, which is a wrestling podcast hosted by myself, Michael Lindenbaum, and our good friend Matthew Carroll. And every occasionally now and again, we will have some guests with us. You can find that over at
txhthockey.com/x75productions/awesomania.
And as for this show, you can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Google Podcasts. And if you go to the thxthockey.com website, you can go to the little X75 Productions drop down. Click on Voices from the Grid, and everything you need is there. You can also find us on Twitter at VFTG_PR, where we will engage with you. So give us your thoughts on anything Power Rangers, be it toys, comics, news. I'm sure one of the four of us will have something to say on the matter.
Speculate.
If it's the comments, it's probably Brian and Mike. Let's be honest.
I mean, I do have to play catch up on the comments.
So do I.
That being said, we will leave you, as we always do anytime I'm part of the podcast, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, skip these episodes. No, I'm kidding. I'm not, though. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender specific honorifics.
And until our next more phenomenal episode, be sure to grab your xenizers and your crystals.
And may the power protect you.
Oh, right. Sash is not here.
Oh. Oops.
She's lucky one.